Hello, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Mardi Gras is French for Fat Tuesday. The name of the annual fest itself implies food. Traditionally, it was met as a time to go to town eating rich, fatty foods prior to the ritual fasting of the Lenten season. Well, we've got an expert in the studio who can speak to delicious comfort foods. In fact, he's a guy who specializes in redefining and re-energizing all American food. Chef Rick Orlando, no stranger to this program. He's the chef owner of New World Home Cooking Company in Saugerties, New York, and chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. Along with eating at his restaurants, you may have seen him taste victory on Food Network's Chopped program, his PBS program, Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen. Maybe you've read his book, We Want Clean Food. Rick Orlando, welcome back to the show.
How are you, Ray? I like the new studio. It's bright. It's IKEA-ish. It's nice.
It's IKEA-ish. That's it. You put your thumb right on it. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. It costs a lot more than IKEA, as a matter of fact. 800-348-2551. You can also post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Well, Rick, before we get into the food, and you brought some good stuff, I want to get into, we talked about you winning Chopped two or three times, right?
Twice.
Okay. This was handed to me by Colleen O'Connell in the front office. It goes back to November. I don't know how this escaped me. Rick Orlando beats Bobby Flay.
I guess you're not a Food Network geek.
Well, my kids are, but I'm not. So what happened?
I beat Bobby Flay. I was invited to go on. I get these casting calls.
Yeah.
And
being a rock star,
I've turned some down. Yeah. Cutthroat Kitchen seemed a little bit out of my wheelhouse. I didn't want to necessarily cook with, whatever toys and junk like that. I wanted to actually cook.
Yeah.
And they invited me to audition for Beat Bobby Flay. They took me on. I went in this summer, recorded the episode, had to keep my mouth shut for 4 months because I whooped them.
Okay,
because
you've been on in that time and you didn't say anything about
it. Oh, you can't.
Okay.
No, they're very strict.
So what did you cook and what did he cook and how did you end up winning?
Well, if you haven't seen the show, the format of the show is Bobby comes out and there are two chefs that he invites in and he presents a secret ingredient and you compete against the other chef in 20 minutes. And the celebrity judges decide who made a dish worthy of then taking on Bobby Flay. So I won my first round.
Okay. Easy enough.
It was easy enough. Yeah, it was pretty straight up. I made one of my menu dishes, my Korean beef bulgogi, and it was spicy, and I had Anne Burrell waving and panting because it was too hot for her, but hey, that's what
okay, so one of the judges? How many judges are there?
There's two. It was Anne Burrell and Spike something or other, who was from
Spike,
Top Chef.
Spike Jones? No.
Could be.
No.
I got to take on Bobby. And what's cool is, well in advance of the show, you meet with these producers and they say, okay, if you get to the second round and take on Bobby, what dish do you want to make? And you have to submit a list of your signature dishes. So
right.
I submitted jerk chicken, Cuban pot roast, blah, blah, blah. And this kid came back and he said, and he must have been 20. Chef, we're going to air you around the holidays. So what do you make for the holidays? And he said, I'm Italian. I make zuppa de pesce. I make baccalà. I said, I've also been making the latkes for the Woodstock Jewish congregation for years. And, of course, he looked at me and said, you make latkes?
Uh-huh.
I said, I make latkes. So he said, you're going to do latkes. So if I were to win that first round, then I would challenge Bobby to a latke competition. And I did win the first round. I challenged Bobby to a latke competition, and I stomped him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You didn't do well?
He did okay, but it was clear, very clear from the judges that my lock is rocked.
All right, well, potato pancakes, right? It's not that difficult. Anybody can do that, right?
Well, anybody can make a decent latke, and everyone's grandmother makes the finest latkes, I'm sure. But then when you add a certain finesse to it, I have a couple little techniques, and it's on my blog if you want to go look it up at rickorlando.com. I do the potatoes two ways. I grate them on a box grater, and then I do them on a mandolin to get lacy crunchiness to them.
Oh, yeah.
I cook them in pure duck fat.
Really?
Which is the closest thing to schmaltz. Traditionally, they're cooked in chicken fat, schmaltz.
Right.
Well, duck fat is something that chefs seem to have around a lot. We bathe in it. So I cook them in pure duck fat, which actually makes them crispier because it's fully saturated. It doesn't soak into the, which seems like an oxymoron, but a full saturated fat won't penetrate the food as much.
Oh, interesting.
And so really crispy. And then I smoked salmon on site to put on top of it and made fresh creme fraiche. It was fun.
So was Flay surprised by the duck fat?
I can't tell. You know, it's a very intense show. And I have to tell you, my admiration for Bobby Flay grew at this day because I knew I was making latkes. I had 3 months to think about it and practice and get it right because it's 40 minutes.
Right.
Bobby finds out what he's making live, and then they do a little camera shift. He probably has 10 minutes to think, and then he has to cook. So the fact that he wins 75% of the time is pretty awesome because most of these chefs are home rehearsing it, getting it just right, and you send them a list of what pans you want and what ingredients you want, and Bobby just finds out. So it's like someone saying to you, Ray, good, make a meatloaf. You got to go.
Well, that won't happen. Well. But the thing is, though, isn't it possible one of the production assistants gives them the heads up an hour or two before? How does he have all the ingredients on hand?
Well, there's a huge pantry.
Yeah.
There's a pantry, and it's stocked well, and it's good. There's everything you could think of. Everything you could think of to cook with is there. Every tool, lots of ingredients. I don't know. I believe them, I guess.
Really?
I'm a sucker.
So is the show done as live, or are you cutting all the time and retaking things?
No, it's done as live.
Wow.
Yeah, 20 minutes cooking, and then a break, and then the judging, and then the presentation of what you're cooking, and then 40 minutes cooking, and then a break, then judging. No, it's just like Chopped. It's live. It's real cooking.
Well, that's got to be good publicity. Did you actually win like a cash prize?
No prize.
Really?
No money.
So Flay gets paid, but you don't get paid.
I just get the feather in my cap, but it's been a good feather in my cap.
Yeah.
You know, the public likes the fact that I like to compete, especially since I'm getting a little older. It's kind of fun. It's like some guys get red Cadillacs or red convertibles.
Mistresses.
Or they get arm candy.
Sure. Yeah.
I compete in cooking shows.
Fair enough.
But I will tell you, they really encouraged me, and I encouraged them to let me promote the area. Hudson Valley, Capital District. I mean, no one really knows what Capital District means. I did mention Albany a few times, but when you say Hudson Valley, actually, when you're coming south on 87, the sign for the Hudson Valley is north of Albany.
Yep.
So we're in the Hudson Valley.
So that's great. That is a really terrific thing to have beaten Bobby Flay, and of course, you've won Chopped a couple of times. When are they going to give you your own Food Network show?
Never.
Really? Have they offered? Have there been discussions?
No, I've actually submitted some stuff, and the last letter I got was that I didn't fit their age profile.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
I was born in the 50s, Ray. That scares people who were born in the 90s.
Boy, you are old. Rick Orlando, very ancient. Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. All right, Rick, what did you bring?
Okay, well, Mardi Gras just passed.
Yep.
And I am a big fan of New Orleans as a city,
yeah,
the people, and of course the food. The roots of my cooking, where I really got inspired to be a chef, was in the 80s when I first had Thai food, when I first had Cajun and Creole food. I discovered all that food in Boston in the 80s, and it really sparked me because it's exciting food. It's being made in America by people who just want to shake up the basic meat and potatoes. So I brought for you today what we call swamp gumbo, which is the first dish, which is gator, crawfish,
alligator. All right,
crawfish and oyster gumbo, which is this particular thing. And we could talk about gumbo and the big bandage on my arm and how that happened.
Well, we'll do that after the break. Yeah,
I've got shrimp and andouille sausage jambalaya.
All right, that sounds normal as opposed to gator.
Well, let me ask you a question.
All right,
let me ask you a question.
We don't get gator much up here.
Cow. Gator.
Cow, good.
What's
cow lives around here.
Let me tell you, years ago when I was first learning about goat cheese, I was a waiter and I was serving goat cheese on a salad probably in 83. And someone looked at me and said, ooh, goat cheese. And I said, yeah, that sounds so much worse than cow cheese.
Well, you make a point.
Right?
All right. Well, still, anyway, gator, so, you know, gator. It's new to me.
It's called swamp gumbo. It's a bayou thing.
Sloth?
There was no sloth. No, okay. No. But we'll be slothy eating it. And then at the end, I brought the notorious and ever popular blackened string beans, which is my own creation.
I'm so glad you did because you tweeted this out. I don't know when it was, a week or two ago or whatever. And the picture has been haunting me, man. I'm glad you brought that.
Well, we did a little BuzzFeed style video, a minute and 20 second video of making the string beans for the Times Union. And it's kind of gone viral. We have 152,000 views so far.
Wow.
So people are excited about blackened string beans. And, you know, they are an original creation, although the science of blackening comes from Chef Paul Prudhomme, who just passed away recently.
Yeah.
Working at K. Paul's. He worked under Emeril Lagasse and developed this this technique.
And what do you do?
Well, the idea of blackening is that you're blackening the spices on the exterior of traditionally fish, but now chicken, steak, and of course I introduced the string beans or vegetables.
Right.
and getting a spicy, salty, bittersweet kind of crunch on the outside without damaging the interior. And it's kind of, you know, it kind of is in and out. But I've always been a believer that if something is ridiculously delicious, it never really goes out of style.
Boy, I'm with you there. You know? And it really looks good. It really looks good. All right, let's take a short break, and then we'll eat, and we'll get to the phones. And the Gator awaits. And frankly, I'm excited about the Gator. So maybe you can make blackened Gator next time. 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest. It's Food Friday. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts. Planning and catering weddings, showers, reunions, and other gatherings, indoors or out, at the Curtis House with three rooms available, or at a variety of venues around the area. GloriosaCO.com. Blue Heron Restaurant & Catering, offering full-service catering at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout western Massachusetts. BlueHeronDining.com/catering. And Hudson Wine Merchants, a wine and spirits boutique in the heart of Hudson, New York. Curbside service and delivery available. Hudson Wine Merchants, raise your glass. HudsonWines.com.
Vox Pop, it's Food Friday on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Chef Rick Orlando. Chef Orlando, the black and green beans are amazing. They got some spice.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what the remoulade sauce is there. In New Orleans, they call that a red remoulade. We call it a Creole remoulade. It's a mustard-based dipping sauce. It's totally vegan. The whole dish is vegan. There's no animal in it, as opposed to the gator next to you. And the remoulade actually cools you down, you know, which is good. But they've taken on a life of their own. I mean, we put them on the menu 22 years ago.
My God.
And they're still one of the best-selling dishes in both restaurants. And then we do the garlic festival and some of the other carnivals, and we sell blackened string beans. And there's a line. People go for them.
I got to say, you have a rather large bandage on your left hand. What the heck happened?
If you saw the Facebook post, you'd know. So I was teaching one of my cooks about making the roux for gumbo.
Okay.
Roux is basically a mix of fat and flour that you would saute a little to thicken a cream soup or thicken a gravy. Well, to make gumbo, you have to get that roux to a dark color, nutty. They talk about peanut butter, mahogany, and then chocolate roux, like those colors.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you have to keep cooking it slowly so you don't burn it and whisking it and stirring it.
So it's fat and flour.
Yeah, 50-50. We had this roux going for the gumbo, and it was about 450 degrees. And I had my CBGB's T-shirt on in the kitchen because I wasn't cooking at that time, but I was teaching a younger cook, make sure you wear a long-sleeve chef coat when you do this, because if you get any on you, it's going to burn you.
Yeah.
And we had the pan in front of us, and he stuck the whisk in and splashed a glop like the size of an egg.
Oh, and he was fired immediately, right?
It was so hot that I ran to the sink, plunged my arm under the cold water, and the water went psh, and steamed off.
Yikes.
But what was fascinating is it didn't hurt for a while. I think I went into shock.
Well, I think that it burns all the nerve endings for a little bit, and then
it really started hurting day before yesterday when the skin came off.
All right, has the gangrene set in yet?
Not yet.
Okay, good.
I still have both hands. I'm ready.
Okay, so
I'm cooking tonight.
Oh, good. Well, good for you. I mean, do it
one
while
hand,
you can.
Right? Yeah.
Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Now, you said before we started the show that you spent some time in New Orleans last year.
We were down in November, right around Beat Bobby Flay time when it came on the air. We came back. Yeah, it is absolutely one of my favorite places on the planet and definitely one of my favorite cities in America for a lot of reasons. You know, we think of New Orleans as Bourbon Street, and Bourbon Street's cool.
Yeah.
That's like thinking of Boston as Faneuil Hall or thinking of New York City as Times Square. Bourbon Street is the center of tourism.
Right.
It's fun. It's cool to see. But the city is a great city. They're great people. The hospitality is fabulous. I happen to like swampy climate, so I like the heat and the humidity.
Yeah.
And I've got some good friends from Albany, actually, who Brian Lawler, who is involved with the housing in New York State, is involved with redevelopment down there. So he's got a couple of houses. We go stay with them. And it's just we just saw the great, there's music everywhere.
Yeah.
There's art everywhere. People love their food, and you can drink everywhere.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a plus.
All day, all night.
What did you learn specifically about cooking that you didn't already know? I mean, you know quite a bit.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily learn anything about cooking. I learned a lot about the restaurant scene, who controls it, what's going on. Because we're thinking about possibly popping a new world down there in a few years. I think so. It might be a good place to have a warm weather outpost. You know, we looked at Florida. We looked at California. Nothing really intrigued me. But New Orleans, I can see having a new world down there. And I can see spending half my life there and half my life here.
So
especially in the winter.
Here, the winter's down there, right?
Yeah.
That's a plan.
And, you know, I learned some cool stuff. I went to the Southern Food Alliance's Food Museum, which was there. I love this. We walk into the museum at 10 o'clock in the morning, and the woman says, "Welcome to the museum. This is where the exhibits on the different states are. This is where the cooking kitchen is, where we do our demos. And over there is the bar, and it's open."
Oh, boy.
I said, "It's 10 in the morning. The bar is open." She said, "And why not?" I said, I have no reason why not. And they have a whole history of the cocktail there, the Sazerac and the Ramos Gin Fizz and all the drinks that were invented in New Orleans.
Wow.
So it's kind of a historic journey.
Well,
and I'm just doing research and development, you know.
You can write that off.
Yeah.
That's very smart. Rick Orlando is our guest, 800-348-2551. It's a Food Friday. All right, we've had the black and green beans because I could not wait.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we try here? What do you want to try?
Well, why don't we pop the tops off and we'll look at the difference between a jambalaya and a gumbo because there's a little confusion sometimes with people.
Oh, that's a nice presentation.
Thank you. Those were my guys, Tony and Max, over at New World Bistro Bar, whipped these up for us and actually met me here and delivered them because I was busy. So jambalaya is a rice-based dish.
Right.
Comes from the word ham, amon, and it's usually sausages and ham. This is with shrimp and cooked with what they call the Trinity. It's a Catholic place, you know.
Yes.
And the Trinity is the base of most of these Creole dishes, peppers, onions, and celery. You will not see a carrot in food from down there.
Really?
You will see
peppers.
Why
is that?
You know, most countries, most regions develop their base of cooking, right? In India, ginger, garlic, onion. In Italy, onion, garlic, celery. In Spain, red pepper, garlics, and onions, you know? And in New Orleans, they have their influences. Don't forget, it is the original American melting pot.
Right.
It's the Creole is the melting pot, right? It's African, Spanish, French, Italian, British, and whoever else couldn't get a ride back to the old country. They stopped off in New Orleans and hung out and stayed.
Yep.
So the jambalaya is made by cooking the sausages and the Trinity with some tomato and herbs and stock and then putting rice in it and cooking the whole thing in the oven. This one happens to have some big Gulf shrimp in it as well.
Oh, yeah. No gator?
No gator in that one.
All right, fine.
Gumbo is more of a stew. And it could be served very loose like a soup or thicker like a dinner like this.
Yep.
It's thickened with the roux. And gumbo comes from the word okra. It's an African word.
Really?
It's the word for okra.
Huh.
So it's thickened with okra and the dark, dark roux. But it also starts with that Trinity, and that has tomatoes, and it has this as shellfish stock and chicken stock. And contrary to some people's belief, it's not necessarily hot food. It's spicy food, but not hot food. There's a lot of spice, a lot of flavor.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, hot is heat, right? I mean, hot is like...
Well, spice gives you heat, right?
Well, spice could not necessarily... I mean, you can have a mild curry, but still have plenty of spice. Coriander is a spice. Cumin's a spice, right? So in these dishes, you've got thyme. You've got a little cayenne. You got paprika, oregano, some chili powders. But you don't make these dishes to read hot. You read them to read a little tingly, but certainly not hot.
Yeah.
But then you always serve your hot stuff on the side. That's why the hot sauces are big down there and they're always on the table because then you can doctor it up any way you want.
Yeah. Rick Orlando is our guest. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Annie in Ulster Park. Annie.
Hi.
Hi, Annie.
I'm calling to... How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I wanted to talk about your green beans.
Okay.
Good.
So
I get to eat one.
Every time I've lived in... near New Paltz for 17 years, and every time somebody new comes to town, I bring them to New World, and I say, "Oh, we're going to get these great green beans," and they look at me like I'm crazy, and then they're totally hooked.
It is funny, isn't it? I'm a tourist attraction. They're a tourist attraction.
And the other thing I just wanted to say is when I turned 50, I had the greatest birthday party in the back room there. It was a great dance party. I teach at SUNY New Paltz, and all my friends came, and so I don't want to have to wait now until I'm 60 to have another party. So I'm having a book come out soon, and I'm going to have another party back there.
You let me know.
Fabulous.
We'll make sure you have
legendary.
Some string beans. Good. Well, thanks so much.
Bye, Annie. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. You know, explain to me again how you do the blackening on this. It almost has like a barbecue grill sort of taste to it.
Well, you'll see it in the video, and you can also see the recipe at my website. We make our own Cajun seasoning.
Yeah.
And it's a mix of salt, a couple different chili powders and paprika, thyme, oregano, garlic powder, and onion powder. But then we mix into that about 25% cornmeal.
Huh.
So you blanch your string beans quickly, put them in a pan, in a bowl, and toss them with a little bit of neutral vegetable oil.
Yeah.
We've been using sunflower oil. That's the non-GMO oil that we found that is not olive oil. You don't want a strong flavored oil, right?
Right.
So sunflower oil. Toss them. And in the meantime, while you're doing all this, you get a cast iron skillet white hot. 10 minutes is high heat on the burner.
Okay.
As hot as can be.
All right.
When you throw those string beans in, you take the string beans out. I don't know if I said this. You put them in with a little oil on them. Then you toss them with the spices. So the spices are kind of clinging to the beans through the oil. And then you throw the beans into the hot pan and dance them around until the spices on the outside turn black, and then get them out of the pan right away. It takes about 15 seconds.
It has to be a really quick process because they taste fresh.
Yes, that's the idea. Crispy, crunchy.
Yeah.
And they're inspired from a place in Cambridge, Mass in the days, Joyce Chen. She has a product line out, and you see her name around. She had a restaurant, and she served what they call Szechuan string beans, which were one of my favorite dishes. And they were basically string beans that were coated with ginger, garlic, and lots of chili flake. But they were just these delicious, crunchy string beans that we would all eat. And so we kind of developed our own thing.
Oh, they're so good. Rick Orlando is our guest. Let's go over to line two and Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
How are you, Jim?
Hey, Ray.
Hey, man.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
I don't know. I don't think of it. I couldn't think of any questions where I, you know, about cooking or whatever. But I'm just calling to Raz Ray and tell him he should definitely try to get some gator as soon as he can.
I'm
get over some alligator.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to eat some.
I had it over at a little barbecue place over on Route 116 and just north of Amherst, Mass. And it was Bob's Barbecue place.
Well,
hold it. You can get barbecue gator in Massachusetts?
Well, it's not barbecue. They normally deep fat fry it with a coating. I asked them if they would please just throw it on the grill for me, not dredge it and deep fat fry it, and they did that for me. They just grilled it. And, Ray, if you didn't know what it was, you'd think you were getting some kind of a white flesh piece of seafood or fish or something.
Really?
It's very
plump
mild.
And juicy
very
and mild.
Mild
and sweet flavored.
And it's fully sustainable. You know,
beautiful.
The gator farms, it's a tradition. You know, one of the things that I always preach in my cooking is to carry on traditions. And, you know, I respect everyone's food choices, but I'm also a believer in tradition. And alligator's been a traditional protein source, especially down in the bayou where there's a lot of poor people. And, you know, you got to find your food.
I really can't tell what's the gator in this.
If I can climb over, I might find a hunk. Hold on.
Show me.
Oh, you have some gator there.
I got a plate here. You just pointed out to me, Rick.
Go right ahead, man.
Okay.
Don't be afraid.
All right, hang on. We're going to try some gator. Oh yeah, this is what my career has come to. I'm eating gator on the radio. Oh well.
Yeah, well.
Hey Jim, thanks for the call.
All right, Ray, take it easy.
800-348-25. Uh-oh, that's the gator, eh? Okay, fair enough. All right, yeah, I don't want to lie to you. I'm a little frightened. A little frightened of the gator, sure. All right, here we go.
Gator kind of tastes like cross between chicken thigh and swordfish.
So this is
There's a nice big chunk
this
there.
This is gator
too.
Right here?
I think that's some, and that's a big hunk right there.
Okay. Okay, that's gator. Oh, my God.
Okay, Ray's eating gator, folks. Line up.
I can't wait to tell the family I'm eating gator. Let's go to line one while I eat gator. Let's go to Ray in Salem. Hi, Ray, you're on.
Oh, hi, Ray. How are you?
Hi. Is this Ray?
It is.
And that's my middle name, Ray.
You're on. I'm going to eat some gator.
Well, thanks for... Yeah, well, I have not had gator, but I am... Very excited to be listening to your show and hearing you, Rick Orlando. And I
Thank
have
you.
Many times tried to emulate your string bean recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the reason why my son loves string beans now is because of your recipe. But I had a quick question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making a roux right now. I'm actually making a Cajun mac and cheese for my husband's dinner tonight.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
And it's an emerald agassi
mm-hmm.
filled with fat recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been trying to make it less fattening, but I also want to incorporate vegetables. Should I saute the vegetables on the side and how much should I use per pound of pasta?
So you're making a mac and cheese. You want to put the vegetables in it instead of just serving a beautiful dish of vegetables on the side. You have to sneak them into your husband.
I've got to sneak them in there. Well, it's for a bunch of people.
Well, I wouldn't saute them at all. I would blanch them in lightly salted water until they're just fork tender, and then fold them into the cooked pasta before you add the cheese sauce. So you're making the roux to make a darker Cajun cheese sauce. Is that the deal?
Exactly.
So you're making it on the stovetop, or you're making it in the oven?
I'm making it on the stovetop.
Yeah, because I have a little secret. We make ours in the oven.
Really?
Well, you started.
I should have called before.
Did you make it already? Is it done?
It's pretty much. I just incorporated the cheese in. Oh. I was whisking away as I was on hold.
Yeah. What color?
It's kind of a medium tone. It's not too dark. It's not too light.
Yeah, because when you're making roux, something I learned from a Cajun cook years ago is you crank your oven up to about 450, and you use a nice heavy pan like a cast iron skillet, and you start your roux on the stove, and when it's going and it's nice and incorporated, you throw it in the oven, and about every 10 or 15 minutes, you open the oven and give it a little whisk, and you can get it to be, from peanut butter color to, like that one, the gumbo that Ray's eating, we'd call that mahogany roux. It's got kind of a mahogany color.
Well, I heard it when you were describing all the different colors. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, but I've gotten it to be as dark as hot, like dark hot chocolate.
But wrap your arm, Ray, when you do this.
I
got a good one.
Honestly, I have a rotator cuff injury. It's very difficult.
Well, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks for your wonderful food, Mr. Rick Orlando.
Thank you, Ray.
800-348-2551. If you have a question for Rick Orlando. Rick, I got to say, this is amazing. And the gator is great.
The gator's good, right?
Really good. It's mild.
It doesn't really have a distinct flavor. It's very, very tender, mild. It really lends itself to braising. A lot of people fry it because they fry stuff because it's easy. But I like putting it in gumbos and stews because it breaks down a little bit. Kind of like mild stew meat, you know?
The consistency
pork shoulder,
of
maybe?
This meat, of this dish, is just great. It's so satisfying. It's a meaty, satisfying eat, and it's... Okay, you say it's not hot or spicy or something?
Yeah.
The old Germanic Ray Graff trick is if the sweat starts beading on the forehead, it's got some spice.
Are you sweating?
Yeah, man. It's not just flop sweat because the show's going pretty well.
Yeah.
So,
Flop sweat.
Yeah, there's definitely some spice in this.
A little bit. But, I mean, I would rate that maybe a 4 on the Richter scale, maybe a 5.
This is great. And I'm sorry to the ladies in the front office, there'll be none left by the end of the show.
Well, there's a lot of jambalaya sitting there now, which is, again, a similar character.
Fair enough. Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. And, so you got cooked celery in here. This is one of the...
That's part of the trinity. Celery, peppers, onions, and, you want to cook them down until they release their flavors, but still have a little texture, like don't cut them too small.
Yeah, I'm generally not crazy about cooked celery. But it works in this.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'll get a Chinese dish or from the Chinese restaurant. It's got cooked celery. Not a big fan.
A lot of the bases of cooking, wherever you live, have those solid base vegetable combinations. But they're always the sum is greater than that of its parts, right?
Right.
It's like when you make tomato sauce, you don't say, "Oh, I taste garlic and onions." You taste tomato sauce.
Right.
Or when you make an Indian curry, you don't say, "Oh, I taste ginger, garlic, onions." Those are the bases for almost all those dishes. So, come on in and eat.
Pat Cooney, come on in. Try some of this. Now, if it makes the Germanic Ray Graff sweat, it's going to make the Irish-American Pat Cooney really sweat.
I'll tell you, we were down in New Orleans in November when the Giants were playing the Saints that weekend. There are a lot of good New York Irishmen down there eating their gumbo and jambalaya.
Yeah.
Patrick, drinking their Sazeracs.
This has gator in it, Pat Cooney. Pat Cooney is our chief operating officer.
That's a fried oyster,
here.
I think.
He's going for it.
There's the gator. There's some gator. Here you go.
Pat's going down to Vegas not too long from now, a few weeks, and you're going to be eating some stuff down there. Isn't that good?
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, you got to go down to Fremont Street when you're in Vegas. That's the place. Okay. That's where it's a lot of fun. That's where the old Golden Nugget is.
It got sold. The Golden Nugget was sold, right?
Oh, I'm sure. Fremont Street, they put this big hologram roof over the block.
Yes.
But it's fun. They have live music outside, and you really feel like you're in a neighborhood there as opposed to the Strip, which is fun, but is bizarre.
Taking all three kids.
Oh, definitely want to go on Fremont Street.
Taking all three kids.
You know what's cool down at the end of Fremont Street is there's a crime and punishment museum down there, the history of the mob development
stuff.
It's a cool museum.
How perfect to have it in Vegas.
Well, of course.
That's outstanding.
I think it was Meyer Lansky's yard.
You want to try the jambalaya while you're here, Pat?
Yeah.
All right. He goes right for the shrimp, huh?
Of course I do.
And those are totally American shrimp.
Look at him go.
Yeah.
Look at him go. He's done this before. Pat Cooney, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, Pat, thanks for coming here.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
And real sustainable. I mean, the American shrimp, Gulf shrimp, are very sustainable. They're not wrecking the environment to have them down there. They're not farm raising them in Vietnam in some cesspool. They're really a good thing. So we're a big proponent of sustainable fish, and you can definitely do that with this kind of food.
Okay, so it's rice, right? Or is it some sort of what kind of rice? It's very meaty.
That's just
it's delicious.
A classic. You know what? It looks like brown rice, actually.
It's really, really good.
Gumbo, I think we did with brown rice to kind of make it healthy. And we did white rice with the jambalaya, like a long grain white. All the rice we get is from California now, so.
Beautiful. Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Get your calls in now. We'll hit the home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, vivafreshpasta.com. Sutter Meats, King Street, Northampton, providing fresh, local, pasture-raised beef, pork, and lamb. Additional house-made items include rotisserie chickens, bone broths, bacon jam, and handmade sausages, suttermeats.com. And River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop.
Friday on a Vox Pop. Ray Graff here. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. He beat Bobby Flay, don't you know? Number to call here is 800-348-2551. And they didn't even give you a prize. You get a trophy or anything?
Not a trophy, just a
medallion saying, I beat Bobby Flay?
No, just a little marketing tool. Well, you beat Bobby Flay. You know,
is he a nice guy?
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah,
and he's a very driven guy, and he's a very serious chef. Like I said, I'm really impressed with his talent. And frankly, got to hand it to him because, you know, the original Food Network people, Emeril, Bobby Flay, Mario Batali, they're chefs. They're working chefs.
Right.
They're guys who started out as kitchen rats. So when you see a lot of the newer people who are obviously more like casted to do shows, they're not. They're real chefs. They develop the skills to be on TV regularly. But Bobby's a cook. And first and foremost, he's a cook. So I respect him.
Let's go back to the phones and Marty in Cheshire, Mass. Marty, you're up.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Marty.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Rick got my attention when he started talking about gator.
Me too.
And I thought I'd share a recipe that you really wouldn't expect it to taste the way it does. Snapping turtle. I don't know if you have any experience with that.
I bet he does.
Well, I've had turtle
like
soup.
The way I cooked it.
Yeah, I've had turtle soup down in New Orleans, but tell me about your snapping turtle.
Well, I got this recipe. There's the South Dakota Department of Fish and Game, Fish and Parks, years ago, put out a cookbook called Cooking the Sportsman's Harvest, and it's got recipes for all kinds of stuff in there. Basically, what you do is you take all your favorite vegetables and make a vegetable broth. You boil it and boil it and boil it forever in a double boiler, and then strain all the solids out of it and keep the broth. And then you... in the double boiler again, I cooked the snapping turtle meat. I must have cooked it 12, 14 hours.
Wow.
It finally started to get really good and tender. And by this time, the flavor turns into, it almost tastes like the beef in Campbell's beef barley soup.
Wow.
What's that taste like?
Cut it out. Stop being such an elitist.
It tastes braised. Yeah. Well, you know, listen, all of these proteins that people who are into game eat, I mean, it's a cool thing. I mean, it's tradition and it's sustainable, and I would try it. Make me some.
Make you some.
Yeah, okay, let me know.
All right, Marty.
Quite a few of them around here.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. Before the fun drive, I had this brainstorm. I was on the air on a Food Friday, and I thought, you know, maybe one of these times we'll do an all-request Food Friday, and we'll have people, have the listeners suggest their favorite recipes.
Yeah, stump the
chumps.
And
then we'll pick 10, and we'll have them come in and read their recipes on the air.
Oh, there you go. I think it'd be a fun show. We used to do that on WMHT, Capital Region Cooks.
Way back when?
Yeah, they would come in and submit recipes, and then we would pick them, and they'd come in and cook them.
Can't do it.
No.
No, I'm not copying.
But that was a long time ago. Long time ago.
Forget it.
Long time ago.
Oh,
I forgot. Did I say the wrong four letters in a row?
That's fine, yeah.
Wrong sequence of letters?
That's okay, man.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, you're talking about cooking game with our last caller. That's tricky business. I've had venison that I think has been great, and then venison that has just been not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be a real art to that.
There's an art to cooking it. With a lot of game, but it's also something that, you know, we're very squeamish in America. We're the most antibacterial, squeamish country in the world, and it makes us make food that sometimes needs chemicals and other things to become delicious and tender. But in Europe, when they get a deer, they hang it for 2 weeks, ducks for 2 weeks, let the natural bacteria do the breaking down of the meat.
Oh, interesting.
And you can get some really delicious game that way. Too many hunters, I think they have to keep it fresh, then freeze it. And you don't give the meat a chance to develop. I get one deer a year from my property with a friend. He shoots it.
Yeah.
And we hang it for, this one I did 10 days.
Really?
And everyone's freaking out. You got to get that deer down. I'm like, no, I don't. And then everyone who ate it said, oh, my God, it's so tender because it's a natural process.
Well, you have to hang it in
a cool place,
though, right?
Well, outside on a tree. And the dog sits under it and looks up like it's worshiping.
Well, let's go back to the phones. Jeremy in Chatham. Jeremy, you're on.
Hey, Jeremy. Okay, my question has to do with scallops.
Okay.
We are big fans of really fresh seafood, and we're getting the day boat scallops from Maine. We're having another order come in, blah, blah, blah. But after all the times that I've cooked them, trying simple, trying breaded, with bacon wrapped, I still don't have like a killer technique that really gets them to be as good as they are when they arrive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, something simple. You got any hints there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to do very much to scallops, actually, because they're so delicious. The secret I find to scallops is getting a pan that is either nonstick or super well seasoned, getting it nice and hot. I take the take your scallops. You can put a little salt and pepper on them. If you want, you can dust a little bit of Asiago or Parmesan cheese just on one side. Put a little mix of butter and olive oil in that hot pan and cook them on one side until they're nice and caramelized, a good 2 or 3 minutes at high heat. Mm-hmm. Turn them over and turn the pan off. And just let them rest so they don't overcook. In about 3 minutes, you can put them on a plate. Just hit them with a little simple beurre blanc or butter sauce, lemon sauce, and they're going to be delicious. You do too much to scallops. They're not that strong of a flavor, you know, lose it. The little scallops are fun to bread and fry, but if you're getting a good-sized day boat scallop, but definitely get some caramelization. There are natural sugars in that protein. When that turns, that scallop gets a brown. And again, cook them just on one side, like a stamp them into the pan.
Right.
And then turn them right over, turn that pan off, and just let them rest in the pan for 3 or 4 minutes, and they'll cook through. You don't want to cook them hard. You could eat them raw if you like. I mean, we do scallop crudo a lot, where you slice them thinly and put a little lemon and olive oil on them. But even if they're just cooked just past that translucent stage to where they're slightly opaque, they're going to be delicious. Just don't mess with them too much.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Thanks, Jeremy. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest. Rick, this came in via email, and this is from Fran, who says, I've grown very fond of blackened ribeye steak, but some of the spice stays on my hot griddle. I've been putting a thin layer of canola oil on the griddle and getting it to smoke hot. I came up with this without a recipe, says Fran. How do I keep the spices on the steak rather than on the griddle?
What I do is you rub the steak with a little bit of oil.
Okay.
You create that little poultice. We use sunflower oil instead of canola, but if you want to use canola, that's fine, but a neutral oil, right? Then you press those spices in really good. Make sure the pan is screaming hot.
Okay.
It's got to be screaming hot.
Do you want to put oil in the pan as well?
No.
That's what
Fran
said. If
the pan is screaming hot, you're going to risk the danger of starting a fire.
Okay.
And you put that steak down and you leave it alone.
Okay.
And it's going to give off its natural fat. Leave it alone. Good three, if it's a good thickish ribeye, good 3-4 minutes in that hot pan. Then you turn it over, kind of like the scallops, and turn the pan down and let it finish. But I just blacken them on the top.
Right.
One side. You don't coat the whole thing.
Okay. So Fran, try the oil on the actual steak and not in the pan and get the pan hot.
Yep.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Mary and Rhinebeck. Mary.
Oh, one more tip on that.
Oh, yeah.
Before Mary,
hang on,
one
Mary.
Second, babe. Hold on, darling. When you lift that steak up, went to blackening, don't squeeze it with tongs, because when you press it, it bends the protein and breaks off. Just take a spatula and gently turn it over. That's
okay. Now it's your turn, Mary.
Okay, Mary, sorry about that.
No problem, guys. How are you?
Good.
Rick, I am a big fan of your seitan. Can you talk to me about how you make it?
She worships seitan.
You seitan worshiper, you. We actually have a woman in Kingston who's been making us seitan for 20 years. We make our own when she's not around, but it's pretty straightforward. She and I both don't use vital wheat gluten when we make seitan, which is the shortcut method of getting seitan. We do it the old-fashioned way, which is a mix of high-gluten white flour and whole wheat flour that you mix with water to a dough, and then you knead and rinse and knead and rinse and knead and rinse until you've rinsed all the starch out till the water runs clear. It's a major process. It takes about an hour.
Yeah.
A lot of work. Once you've gotten all that starch out, it'll be about a third of the size you started with because you're washing out a lot of the volume, and it'll feel kind of like bubble gum. At that point, we form it, wrap it in plastic wrap, poach it for a while so it sets, and then we make a broth. And our broth is very simple. It's water with a little bit of soy sauce, a little ginger, a little garlic, and a couple star anise, and we just gently poach it for about 2 hours in that water. But it's all about doing it the traditional way, which is made with high gluten flour and whole wheat flour, not using the vital wheat gluten, which the vital wheat gluten is cool, but it makes it very much gummy, like rubbery, as opposed to tender.
And then how do you cook it?
At the restaurant? We make a mix of blue corn flour, which is really high in lysine and really good for you. And we put some seasonings in it, some chili powder, a pinch of cinnamon, a pinch of garlic. And we just coat it and pan fry it in sunflower oil. That's it. Make cutlets. That's it. It's delicious.
It is. It's one of my
favorites. Absolutely delicious. Good. And we actually made a Cajun Creole dish. We made shrimp and grits for Mardi Gras, but we also made seitan and grits. We took nuggets of seitan about the size of shrimp, and we quickly pan-fried them and served them with a traditional shrimp and grits dish, and it was very popular.
It can be very good and very meaty.
Yeah.
Very good.
Oh, it's awesome.
Mary, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rick.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. You know, sort of an underlying theme in a lot of the advice you give and a lot of the chefs give is keep it simple. And it's funny, how long did it take you as a professional to learn that sometimes going a little more razzle-dazzle does more harm than good?
I was a young buck once.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of probably young people, and whatever they do.
Let's do the musical analogy. When you're young and you start playing in a band, boy, you can't stop laying down the hardest licks, and you're trying to show everybody how good you are.
Right.
And as you get a little older, the word is tasty. You want to be tasty.
Yeah.
A tasty player, a tasty chef. When the food is good, you don't need to show off too many techniques. You need to show off proper cooking and great flavor. I also am a fan of peasant food and traditional American food and melting pot food, which is really big on flavor, not big on other stuff.
Theatrics.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the cooks that work for me and are successful understand how good food is and how good you are. You know, when you have a good musician, an older musician teaches a younger musician, not so much, you don't want to show the guest what you could play, it's what you should play.
You make a point. Let's go to Fred and Hurley. Fred, you're on with Rick Orlando.
Hello, Rick. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Fred.
Good afternoon. Rick, I have to say your blackened string beans are one of my top 10 foods ever.
Me too.
Oh, thank you.
That dish is in my mind forever. as far as venison is concerned, my brother up in Vermont hunts all the time, and he's found a way to like make sort of like sausages with venison.
Yeah.
And so, it's a very big product up there. And so, as far as that goes, turtles, okay, snapping turtles.
Yeah.
Do they farm snapping turtles? Are they farming?
Good question.
I believe that there is some being farmed. It's not really a popular meat. I mean, it's on a lot of menus down in Louisiana because it's a traditional dish.
In the old days, turtle soup, though. You watch an old movie from the 30s or 40s, they're eating turtle soup.
And it's on a lot of the old Commander's Palace and the old school restaurants that are keeping that tradition alive. If you go to LA Seafood, LouisianaSeafood.com. They have a website, and they sell all the traditional stuff, crawfish, gator, turtle, and they farm everything down there for that, yeah.
Uh-huh, okay. Yeah, we had a Vietnamese family up in Vermont, you know, one day, and we were out in the river, and there was this 100-year-old turtle going down the river, and they were trying to get it in the car. Kind of thing.
Oh, no.
That's, you know, you let the guy, let him live. Go to the Asian market and grab a few. Hey, Fred.
We set them free.
Good. Fred, thanks for the call.
Later.
Have a good weekend.
Ever get bitten by a snapping turtle? Those guys are brutal.
No.
Brutal.
I don't really want to. No. Rick in Warren, Mass. Rick, you're on.
Hi. Next time you're heading down Mass Pike towards Boston and you're crossing 290 and 190 exit, there is a shrimp farm in a town outside of Worcester, where if you give them time, they'll actually even raise you a one-pound shrimp. It's all indoors in above-ground pools.
Huh.
They're the sweetest shrimp that I have ever had.
Huh.
You go in, you order them, they take you into the tanks. The little critters are jumping out of the buckets. They're so lively, and there are no pathogens, so if you wanted to eat them raw, you honestly could right then and there.
Wow, that's interesting, because, you know, I'm not a fan of farm shrimp per se, because in the marketplace, because most of it's coming from Southeast Asia and China, and
yep,
the regulations are very lax, and I just won't serve them in the restaurant. But you know, there are some really good, clean, sustainable aquaculture programs going on in America and Canada that the Monterey Seafood Watch and other Seafood Watch people are behind supporting. So I'm very curious about it. I'm going to look it up. Thank you.
Yeah, hey, please do. Just a little in West Boylston. That's where they're located.
All right.
Hey, Rick, thanks
is.
For the call.
Bye-bye.
Yep. 800-348-2551. John in Pittsfield, you're on with Chef Rick Orlando.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have another question about steak. If I have a wet marinade, like a teriyaki or something,
mm-hmm,
and I'll throw the flank steak in there for a day, what's the best way to cook that on stovetop? Do I use oil with it?
Well, here's what's going to happen, right? You've got osmosis going on. It's going to soak in your marinade, and when it gets heated, it's going to release it, so it's going to create like a steamy situation. So it's kind of hard to get a crust on it at that point. That's
right.
Why wet marinades are always better for the grill,
yep,
and dry rubs are better for the pan. However, you know, if you've got a cast iron skillet with ribs, you can cook it there, a rib pan. But the other thing is make sure you dry it off really well. You know, take some paper towels and dry that steak off really well, and then put a little, even though you did a wet marinade, bridge the ingredients from there into a dry rub. Like if your wet marinade has teriyaki, then you could put salt, maybe a little pinch of brown sugar, a little bit of star anise or dry ginger, and make a dry rub that creates a little bit of a cushion for that meat so that it gets a crust in the pan.
Awesome. Okay.
All right.
Brilliant idea.
Thank you so much. You guys are awesome.
Cool. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. Let's see if we can get a couple of more in here. Terry in Holyoke. Terry, you're on with Chef Rick Orlando.
Oh, yeah. Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Terry.
I wanted to ask Mr. Orlando, if I was, in fact, late for lunch, would I still miss the bus? All
right, well. Depends on how you got there, bro.
Well, sometimes I would rub dirt in my face.
All right, Terry, that's well done, old boy. Thank you very much. You know, you wait all this time
from,
to get on the show to act like a bonehead.
We've had a couple of good ones in our time, haven't we?
Yeah, not bad.
I know a couple of good clown calls.
Yes, indeed. It's always fun. Well, that's very, by the way, very interesting. And I like to, we like to do London broil on the grill in the summer. And interesting that if I were to do it in the pan or broil it inside, we'll marinate ours traditionally for like 36 hours.
Mm-hmm.
To put some dry rub on it before you cook it. I never thought of that.
Yeah, it'll help. And make sure you dry it off well. Get it out of the marinade. Let it come to room temperature before you cook it. It's important. I feel like Dr. Ruth doing the show a little bit. It's going to be okay, Ray. Your London broil is going to be just fine.
Talk me off the ledge. All right, Rick Orlando, what's the website? What's the blog?
Go to rickorlando.com. You can find my blog. You can find the links to the restaurants and to our catering. You know, we've got this new Times Union video that's out there doing the black and string beans, which has 152,000 views.
There may be more after
today. So black and string beans are hot. So let's do it.
Okay, Rick Orlando, thanks for being here.
Thanks
to everybody who called in. Support comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, featuring local producer-only foods and products every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. inside the Troy Atrium, parking in the Uncle Sam Garage, troymarket.org. Field Goods, delivering local produce every week from small farms all year long, pickups at workplaces and other locations, including all Hewitt's Garden Center locations, field-goods.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for the great calls. Thanks to the great chef, Rick Orlando. Thanks to chef Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by Barb King today. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. The news is next.